Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move further proceedings on the roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. All opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The Sergeant of Arms will bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is the intern pastor, Peter Weston Miller, from our Redeemer Lutheran Church in St. Paul. Following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Good morning. Let us pray. Source of all love and wisdom, we thank you for this new day, for the rare and beautiful and unwanted Minnesota May snowflakes, for rest and the comfort of warm homes and loved ones, for agitation stirring in our hearts to get us moving to tackle the challenges of our particular responsibilities. Help us to stay grounded in this day and this day alone, with all of its great opportunities and obvious limitations. Guide a spirited and respectful conversation in this chamber and the decisions that are made here today. Use this powerful collection of personalities and insights and hearts to uplift Minnesota values and the good of all. Help us help those gathered to be conscious of those not present while keeping in mind their needs. Instill wise leadership of the abundant resources of our state and the bigger picture of the full cost of each precious gift of the earth. Most of all, you have made each of us as unique and special, just like the snowflakes of ice that fall. And yet, like them, we are also quite similar, and our desires often simple. Bind us together this day and always through your wisdom and love as we all wait to be warmed by the sun. Shalom, salam, namaste, peace, amen.
To the flag of the United States of America. One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice.
The secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Benson, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fishbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Lori, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J., Peterson B., Pratt, Reiner, Rest, Rosen, Rude, Saxhog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Uyghur, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. We move to the third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate files herewith returned. Senate file number 510, a bill for an act relating to solid waste, amending process for cities to implement organized collection of solid waste. And Senate file 825, a bill for an act relating to health, making changes to the Medical Practice Act, signed Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. And, Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 843, a bill for an act relating to local government, authorizing publication of advertisements for competitive bids in a recognized industry trade journal. Senate file number 843 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Members, this can be found in House Journal May 2nd, page 4198, and Senate Journal April 15th, page number 1843. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Madam President. This was Senate File 843, which we passed on April 15th. There was a change in the House when they passed it yesterday. There was an inadvertent omission of the word should have been taken out that said for transportation projects. This was the bill that talked about putting all of the detail on the web rather than in paper, newspaper. And what we wanted to take out the words that say for transportation projects so that we wouldn't limit the legislation to only transportation projects, but for all projects that cities would want to put on the web. And I've spoken with the other author, Senator Hall, and we would move to concur with the House language.
Senator Scalzi moved that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House Senate file number 843 and the bill be placed on its repassage as amendment, as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate file number 843, a bill for an act relating to local government authorizing publication of advertisements for competitive bids in a recognized industry trade journal, requiring a report.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted that desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 54 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Secretary. Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 1270, a bill for an act relating to transportation, modifying provisions governing transportation and public safety policies, including highway signs, highway jurisdictions, accounts, state aid definitions, and variances. Senate file number 1270 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, with apologies to Senator Hahn, I'll have to read this motion so I get it right. Madam President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate file number 1270, and that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
All those in favor of that motion, say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House files number 195, 1390, 1284, and 590. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
We move now to the fourth order of business, first reading of House bills. The bills will be referred as indicated and given their first reading. Fifth order of business, reports of committees. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. The bills, as indicated on the agenda, will be given their second reading. Eighth order of business, introduction and reading of first bills. The bills will be referred as indicated and given their first reading. Ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. There's one author motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move a recess of the Senate for about 1 hour.
All those in favor of the motion to recess, say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach?
Madam President, the majority caucus will caucus on 107 immediately.
Senator Hahn?
Mr. President, I move further proceedings on the roll call be dispensed with. The Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Senator Bach.
Mr. President, is there a privilege report at the desk?
There is. The Secretary will read the privilege report.
Senator Bach from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on Senate File Number 1270. Senators Dibble, Kent, Carlson, Jensen, and Peterson J. Senator Bach moves that the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion passes. Senator Bach.
Mr. President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration and members. The list is on your desk, but one has been withdrawn, number 60, House File 458. The rest bill has been withdrawn, but the others will take up.
Thank you, Senator Bach. Our first bill under consideration then is Senate File, 1234. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 1234 is the Workers' Comp Advisory Council's housekeeping bill, and Senate File 1603, which will later be amended, is the Workers' Compensation Association's policy updates. Senate File 1234 is the Worker Compensation Housekeeping Bill. It includes technical changes and non-controversial policy updates. Section 1 gives the Commissioner some discretion whether to investigate against complaints against vendors. Section 2 adds to the Department's current authority to hold administrative conferences and issues decisions involving medical requests. Section 3 clarifies that an insolvent insurer is not entitled to reimbursement of supplementary or secondary injury benefits from a special compensation fund. Section 4 clarifies the Department of Labor and Industry's data policies in connection with workers' comp claims. Section 5 requires notice to employers of a proposed settlement with a special comp fund, giving the employer 15 days to object or waive defenses to a subsequent claim for reimbursement. Section 6 allows the Commissioner to use a methodology other than Six Sigma to perform certain evaluations. And Section 7 says that if a case is settled while pending before the Work Compensation Court of Appeals, the settlement must be approved by an administrative law judge. These provisions, members, were approved by the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council and passed by the Jobs Committee. The Workers' Compensation Advisory Council is a 12-member council, six representing business and six representing labor. Two members of the Senate serve on that committee, as well as two in the House as ex officio members. Senator John Peterson and myself are the current Senate members. The Workers' Comp Advisory Council was established in statute to advise the Department of Labor and Industry to make recommendations for statute changes in the legislature. I did not serve prior to its establishment, but I know that it has been a well-respected process, allowing employers and employees to work together and bring changes forward only when they have a consensus on items. Since approving the items in Senate File 1234, the Council has continued to meet and negotiate additional items that they feel will benefit injured workers and bring cost savings into the system. In mid-April, the Council unanimously passed a second set of recommendations, and those were introduced as Senate File 1603, which was heard and passed by the Jobs Committee earlier this week. It would be preferable to handle all of the Workers' Comp Advisory Council's recommendation this year's one bill. So, members, at this time, I would like to offer the A50 amendment.
The clerk will report the amendment.
Mr. President.
Senator Benson, I'm going to let the clerk report the amendment.
Thank you. Senator Sparks moves to amend Senate File 1234 as follows, page 1 after line 6, insert, and this is the A50 amendment.
To the A50 amendment, Senator Benson.
Mr. President, I impose a call of the Senate for the remainder of the proceedings and ask for a roll call.
On the amendment. Okay. Senate is under call.
Yes. She asked for a roll call. It's dreamed up. I wonder what it
is. Senator Benson.
Mr. President, I ask that we dispense with further proceedings under the call and the sergeants bring in the absent members.
Thank you, Senator Benson. The sergeants will bring in the absent members. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, thank you. Sergeants, find those missing members. To the A50 amendment,
Mr. President.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I move that Senate File 1234 be referred to the Committee on Commerce.
Motion has been made that Senate File 1234 be referred to the Committee on Commerce. That motion is in order. To the motion, Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I want you to know that Senate File 1234 and then the proposed amendment, which was Senate File 1603, were not heard in the Commerce Committee. This is work comp insurance. This particular bill absolutely should go through the Commerce Committee, especially 1603, which is controversial. Not having any chance to take a look at that in one of the key committees that it impacts moves me to make this amendment.
Further discussion on the motion to re-refer?
Mr. President.
Senator Metzen, thank you.
Yeah, I anticipated this question on the floor, so I checked with the Commerce legal person, and he said that we've never heard these workers' comp insurance bills in the past, so it'd be something new, and it's not the right way to go on this one.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like a roll call, too, but I talked to Senator Metzen about this earlier, and we both conferred that we've heard these kind of bills in Commerce before, and so I think it's important that we have more eyes on this bill. It is, particularly with the amendment, is controversial, and that's where it should go.
A roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. Senator Metzen.
Yeah, we did, Mr. President, we did kind of visit like that, but then upon checking it out more thoroughly, I was told that we've not been hearing this kind of bill.
Further discussion, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I guess it's become apparent here in just the last few seconds that Commerce is not interested in hearing this bill. So, Mr. President, would Senator Sparks yield?
Senator Sparks will yield. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Sparks, I think one of the concerns and one of the reasons why I would support this amendment for the Commerce Committee to hear it is I think there's speculation and concern that this is going to significantly raise workman's comp insurance in the state of Minnesota. So the question would be for Senator Sparks is in the Jobs Committee. Did you take testimony that gave your committee an idea of how much workman's comp insurance would go up in the state of Minnesota?
And Senator Peterson, thank you for making it clear that your debate was to the motion to re-refer. Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair and members, we did hear the bill in front of the Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development Committee on Tuesday. It was fully vetted with all the members there. It's hard to give you an exact number, Senator Peterson. I think that they said that a minimal increase would be maybe from 1.2 to 1.4% increase, but there's also savings throughout the bill. So with a workers' comp bill as big as this, obviously it's not going to be a huge increase, and there will be some savings throughout the bill.
Senator Peterson.
So, Mr. President, would Senator Sparks yield for one more question?
Senator Sparks?
So, Mr. President, Senator Sparks, so it's your position, the position of the committee, that workman's comp insurance, all things being the same, would remain the same or go down with this bill and this provision?
Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, as I said, in 2010, the entire system to the workers' comp system was $1.3 billion. I believe we did hear testimony that there would be a minor increase, again, I said between 1.2 and 1.4 increase, but there's also some savings throughout the bill with a budget as large as that. And again, I would remind members that this was agreed upon language. The Minnesota Chamber has signed off on this, as well as the labor. It was passed unanimously out of the advisory council, Senator Peterson.
Well, Mr. President, and members, I think that's what testimony that demonstrates that this is a reasonable request, members, to send this bill back to the Commerce Committee. It is unclear in terms of what this effect will have on the cost of workman's comp insurance in Minnesota. Members, you must realize that the 8 out of every 10 employers in this state are what I would call small business employers. And nonprofit organizations that have 200 employees or less, members, that is the core of our jobs in Minnesota. Listen to that again, please. 8 out of every 10 employers in this state have 200 employees or less. Every one of them has to buy workman's comp insurance. Members, and if there is any doubt that this is going to raise their insurance, all things being the same, not considering the individual impacts that each company has in terms of that insurance, we ought to be very, very cautious. It's a very reasonable request to move this back to Commerce. And if for nothing else, just to answer that simple question and take testimony from the industry, the folks that sell this insurance, those that use this insurance, what impact this is going to have on their organizations. You heard Senator Sparks reference a number of saving measures as well, but yet he hesitates and stops short of telling that those cost-saving measures are going to have an impact and prevent an increase moving forward. So, members, I urge your support of the Gazelka amendment to motion to refer this bill back to Commerce.
Members, on the motion to re-refer, Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. I do arise to support the motion to re-refer to Commerce. I did request a fiscal note last Wednesday after we heard this in the Jobs Committee, and I have not received that fiscal note yet. And this is a fairly large change in workers' compensation. As Senator Sparks alluded to, this is a big bill. And I think that we need to refer it back to Commerce to get another set of eyes to look at it, get some time to get the fiscal note on it. And so I do support Senator Kozelka's motion.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. President. And first of all, I want to say that this is workers' comp, and it hasn't been workman's comp for 20 years, so let's keep it neutral. But I want to oppose this motion because for those that haven't been around here for a while, the Workers' Compensation Council was formed around 1995 because every single year in the legislature for at least 10 years that I know of and maybe longer, this issue was so controversial and so hard fought that we spent a lot of legislative time on it. When the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council was formed with even numbers of business and labor people and some legislators on it, they really work hard in that group to come to a compromise, and they do a really good job. They fight hard, they hear a lot of testimony, and it goes through quite a process before it gets here to us. And I think just about all of us in the past have respected the document that comes out of that group because they do work so hard and because we haven't had to have that controversial conversation with every employer that wants to talk about it and every single labor union that wants to talk about it and all the QRCs and everybody else in the system, because they do that, they battle that out. This is one of the most successful councils that the legislature has ever put together. And no matter which party has been in power, we usually haven't messed around with the advisory council's bill. So I would suggest that we just hear this on the floor today. Senator Metzen already said he didn't need to hear it. And let's just vote on it.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, I'm just saying that we need to take a little bit more time over this bill. Commerce Committee is clearly one of the areas that this should have been heard. And it's also partly controversial, so taking a little bit extra time, we still have 3 weeks or so. There's no reason we couldn't have done that and still shouldn't do it.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. President. To these points, Senator Goodwin had mentioned, Mr. President, that these councils get together, they work hard, they struggle and negotiate to get these things done, so they really know all about it. Well, I hate to remind members that we have a constitution, we have
Senator Chamberlain, just members, it's hard to hear up here at the podium, so I'm guessing you might have a hard time hearing Senator Chamberlain as well. So if we could take conversations off the floor. Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have a constitution, we have law, we have procedure, we have permanent rules, we have committees. They're here to hear the people's business. They are here to hear the people's business, not just task force and councils. This is clearly under the purview of the Commerce Department. And this is clearly a tactic to attach something to this bill that doesn't belong there. Behind the doors, behind curtains, attempt to do something without the citizens seeing and having this thing vetted through the proper process. So if we respect the law and the process, members, Mr. President, please send this back to where it belongs for a proper vetting and review and questioning. We do have time. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I too stand in support of Senator Gazelka's motion. It's important to see that this bill was dropped late after deadline. It was actually dropped on April 15th, I believe, and heard the same day in the Jobs Committee. So it's heard the same day that it was dropped. I don't know how any bill dealing with insurance doesn't go through the Commerce Committee. And I'd be interested to talk to whatever council advised Senator Metzen that Commerce Committee doesn't hear this sort of thing. I have a little bit of familiarity with workers' compensation because I practiced law in that area for 6 years full-time. And for the last several years, I've been involved in a part-time. Folks, this is a very substantive bill. I'm just taking a glance through it quickly. I'm not on the Jobs Committee, so I didn't vet this bill myself in committee. I'm just taking a quick read through it. It's dealing with changing definitions of mental versus physical injuries. It is doubling the maximum attorney fee that a plaintiff's attorney can take in a case from $13,000 to $26,000. I believe there are some changes in the definitions of certain kinds of disability benefits. And by the way, I want to make a correction. I'm trying to do things quickly here. It was actually heard on May 1st. So that is not correct that it was heard the same day that it was dropped. I apologize for that bit of misinformation. The point is, Mr. President, I am now here on the floor being asked to vote on what is a major piece of legislation, not having had what I believe to be the proper committee vetted, attached as an amendment to what the author portrayed as a, quote, non-controversial bill. This is just not right. And in terms of Senator Goodwin's comments about the council, I've actually appeared in front of the council and had some discussion. I believe it's a good body. I believe that they do good work, and I think there's fair representation of the various stakeholders there. but we don't get elected to farm out our decision-making process to other groups, to non-elected bodies. For them to get together and they have an understanding of how the system works and provide us recommendations, wonderful. But it is irresponsible of this body not to put this bill through the proper committee channels and give the members time to make a reasonable decision on the floor. I strongly support the Gazelka amendment, and I really hope we don't ramrod this through as an amendment like this. This is just wrong.
Further discussion on the motion to re-refer. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, it's important for you to understand why workman's comp is such a controversial issue that Senator Goodwin referenced. When somebody gets hurt and goes into the doctor to get care, whether they go to the hospital, whether they go to the doctor, or they go to the chiropractor, one of the very first questions that medical provider asks of that person is, well, where did you get hurt? Because members, if you get hurt at work, that medical community can charge about 20 to 25% more for the exact same injury as if you were having that care taken, your injury taken care of through your general medical, your conventional health insurance provided by your employer. So you can imagine breaking your arm at work, going in and getting your arm set and cast and getting charged 20 to 25% more. Whereas if you had gotten home, broken your elbow on your driveway, and you have to run that expense through your employer's insurance, getting charged 20% less. Members, that's why this is so controversial, because when we have legislation that comes forward and in any way transfer those injuries from our general medical health plans to workman's comp insurance members, it drives up the cost significantly. And I would argue every one of your districts has constituents that would support you slowing this down, supporting this motion to send it back to Commerce, and please get a handle on what this type of legislation is going to cost next year. In fact, the constituents in your district will start getting quotes on work comp insurance probably within the next few months. Once we move through the summer into June and July, they'll start getting their quotes. And members, if they start getting quotes that are in the range of 20 to 25% higher, members, you are going to be held responsible because of this legislation that's moving forward. All you have to do is support this motion, send it back for a few more days, get some testimony on what this is actually going to cost your employers, small employers, where most of your jobs are in your district. Please support this motion.
Further discussion, Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. I would like to share with you a story about a constituent of mine and ask for your support of this amendment, but also to respond to some of the members who have said that we can wait and that we need to continue to listen to the industry and pay attention to healthcare costs and really all of these arguments to protect industries. Members, I would like to talk to you about Mr. Brown, who's a worker. And this is about individuals and workers.
Mr. President?
Senator Chamberlain.
Point of order. Are we, Senator Torres-Ray, is she addressing the motion to re-refer, or is she discussing the bill?
Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. Just a reminder that we're on the motion to re-refer to committee and not on the underlying amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. Absolutely. The motion to refer has been supported by arguments that we need to wait and that we are not ready. And the reason I want to share this with you members is because I think that we're running out of time. I have a constituent who is 75 years old, who was placed in total disability in 1994 after waiting for seven years to hear about his case. After 7 years, he gets placed in total disability, members, and then he receives $200 a week after he made $700 a week, he receives $200, and he has lived in poverty for all of these years, 26 years.
Mr. President, point of order.
Senator Chamberlain, state your point of order.
Sorry to disturb you, Mr. President, members, but are we on the motion re-refer, or are we, because I've got stories too, Mr. President, members. I've got stories of people who are going to lose their jobs, businesses will close because of this bill. So we can go on with the stories, or we can discuss the motion re-refer. So
okay. Senator Chamberlain, thank you. Thanks, Senator Torres, for made her case for why she is arguing against the motion to re-refer because of timeliness. That case has been made by other members. I'm going to allow her to finish, and I'm going to remind members that we're debating the motion to re-refer and may have an opportunity then to debate the underlying amendment and bill. So, Senator Torres, right, to the motion to re-refer.
Thank you, Mr. President. So I oppose the motion to re-refer, and I ask members to really consider this very carefully, because this is not just about the industries, this is not just about a commerce decision, this is about people.
Thank you. Further discussion, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm wondering if Senator Sparks would answer a question.
Senator Sparks will yield.
Thank you. And Senator Sparks, I've looked up on the system. It says the bill was introduced on April 15th, which is past the deadline. Got hearing in the Jobs Committee, as Senator Thompson mentioned a couple of days ago. It's sitting in rules right now. Why is this being brought to the floor now? I mean, it seems like this is a late bill. If it's a big, important bill, I can understand the importance of it, but it seems to me that if it's so important, it should have been introduced earlier, should have had an opportunity to go through the process. Why is it being brought so late in the process and then being rushed through? What's the reason for that?
Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Senator Hamm's question. As I said in my original remarks to Senate File 1234, those are the recommendations that came forward before the deadline. The Work Comp Advisory Council continued to negotiate after that time. They came to an agreement for what's in front of us on April 10th, and thank you, Senator Thompson, for clarifying your earlier statement. The bill was introduced to the Minnesota Senate on April 15th. It was posted. It had a full hearing in the Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development Committee on April 30th and was reported to the floor on May 1st, Madam Chair and members. So I don't think we're rushing anything. I think that the Work Comp Advisory Council has been negotiating and working on this for several months. As it was stated earlier by Senator Metz and the Chair of the Commerce Committee, this bill has never been referred to the Commerce Committee in the past. So I hope that answers your question, Senator Hand.
Further discussion, Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. President, on the motion to re-refer, members, I served for years as one of the legislative members on the Workers' Comp Advisory Council, first as a member of the House, then as a member of the Senate, have carried many, many of these Workers' Comp Advisory Council bills over the years, and never has the bill ever gone to the Commerce Committee. It's always come out of the Labor Committee to the floor. That has not been the past precedence. So I speak against the motion to re-refer.
Further discussion on the motion to re-refer. Seeing none, a roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll on the motion to re-refer. all members having voted who wish to vote, the clerk will close the roll. There being 24 ayes and 37 nays, the motion to re-refer is not adopted. Members, we are back on the underlying motion with the A50 amendment.
Mr. President.
Senator Hand.
Mr. President, I'd like to move for a recess of 1 hour to allow our caucus to discuss this new bill that's before us that we have not had an opportunity to fully debate or talk about, and would ask for a 1 hour recess.
Motion has been made to recess. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion is not adopted. On the A50 amendment, Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will Senator Sparks yield?
Senator Sparks will yield. Senator Gazelka.
Mr. President, I wonder if I could describe what's in the A50 amendment maybe before we move on.
Sorry, Senator Sparks, let me finish with Senator Gazelka.
Mr. President, I will let Senator Sparks do that first. I have some questions, but I want to give him that opportunity.
Thank you, Senator Gazelka. I appreciate that. Senator Sparks.
Mr. President, Senator Gazelka, thank you. The A50 amendment is the language that was passed out of the Jobs Committee earlier this week, and I can run through those provisions now for you. Sections 1 and 2 provide that injuries caused by a mental stimulus and resulting in a mental injury may be compensated. Section 3 raises the cap on attorney fees from $13,000 to $26,000. Section 4 regulates the payment of attorney fees to prevent the insurer from having to double pay. Section 5 changes the maximum weekly benefit to 102% of the statewide average weekly wage. Section 6 limits the length of time an individual may receive certain job placement services. Section 7 prevents a qualified rehabilitation consultant filling the roles of both case management and statutory rehabilitation for the same employee. Section 8 requires more rehabilitation conferences to be held within 21 days of a request. Section 9 allows the use of a two-year period of billing data to establish prevailing charge. Section 10 amends the timing and cap of workers' compensation cost of living adjustment. Section 11 requires the adoption of roles for pain contracts with regard to workers who require long-term use of narcotic medications. Section 12 creates a pilot program to assist workers who are considering spinal fusions and other back treatment options. And Section 13 requires the Department of Labor and Industry to conduct a reimbursement cost study for the effects of potential reform. Members, those are the provisions of the A50 amendment. As I stated earlier, they were recommendations from the Workforce Advisory Council, and I would appreciate your support in adding these to Senate File 1234. In addition, each of you should have a letter on your desk from Shara Knutson, the president of the AFL-CIO, and David Olson, the president of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, asking for your support for the entire package. And again, these were the recommendations of that work group. With that, Madam Chair, I would look forward to a discussion and answering any questions.
Discussion on the A50 amendment. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will Senator Sparks now yield?
Senator Sparks will yield.
Senator Sparks, because we're doing this on the floor, I guess I need to ask you three questions for sure. Under Section 3, what was the reason that we bumped up attorney fees basically double from $13,000 to $26,000? That's line 4.19.
Senator Sparks.
Mr. President and Senator Gazelka, thank you for the question. Section 3, dealing with attorney fees, the changes in the fee formula from the current 25% from the first $4,000 and 20% after that to a flat 20%. It also raises the cap, and I think that was your question, from $13,000 to $26,000. Is that correct? Those injured worker attorney fees have been frozen for over 21 years, is my understanding, and that injured workers have won court decisions to expand their fees. So the agreement has attorneys giving up those fees in return for the increase. So I think it's, while it seems like a pretty big jump, I think to have your fees frozen for 21 years was a little bit unreasonable.
Senator Gazelka.
So thank you, Mr. President. So we basically doubled their fee, which will impact the rates. If Senator Sparks would yield again.
He will.
Under Section 5, weekly compensation, we're moving that from $850 a week to 102% of the statewide average weekly wage. Can you tell me what that wage is? Line 6.5.
Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. President, and to Senator Gazelka. The current maximum compensation rate was $850 a week. So this change to the maximum weekly benefit of $122 right now currently would go to $916, so about an $84 increase. And I think if you look back at the history, in 1995 it went to a fixed dollar amount, in 2000 it increased, and again in 2008. So it has been a while since that's been increased.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. President. So still a significant increase, which does impact the rates. And then Section 6, job development limitations. Can you explain how that is different from what we presently have?
Senator Sparks, will you yield? You will. And Senator Gazelka, I think you might need to repeat the question, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Sparks, under Section 6, the job development limitation section, how is that language different, or what do we do differently there than what is presently in place?
So, Senator Sparks, to Section 6 of the amendment.
Section 6. Thank you, Mr. President and Senator Gazelka. Under the current law, it sets no limit on job services. The system leaves some injured workers doing endless job searches with little or no positive results. So they think the intent of this law was to move it down to 3 months, and in the event that they need an extension, they would go through the Commission of the Department of Labor and Industry and could have an extension to go out 6 months. In addition, there are other retraining availabilities available as well.
Further discussion on the A50 amendment. Senator Gazelka.
Mr. President, just looking at a brief look at the bill, when they talked about a 1.5 to 2% increase or whatever it was, because I hadn't heard in committee and this just came to my attention, I heard some talk about a 20 to 30% increase in premiums. And it's part of the reason I'm giving pause. I'm saying I wish we had gone back to commerce, but because of the process that we're going through right now, there's no way I can support this at this time.
Further discussion on the A50 amendment. Senator Thompson.
Mr. President, thank you. I'd like to ask Senator Sparks a question.
Senator Sparks, will you yield? He will.
Thank you, Mr. President and Senator Sparks. It's long time been the case in workers' compensation law that mental trauma resulting in a physical disability or the reverse is compensated. But a mental injury resulting from some sort of mental kind of pressure has not. I see post-traumatic stress disorder is now covered, even if it is induced only by some sort of mental stimuli rather than physical. Was there any estimate that you're aware of, or do you know what kind of impact this will have on work comp payouts and potentially work comp premiums? And if so, who testified to it? What's the situation with that?
Senator Sparks, on that provision.
Mr. President and Senator Thompson, we heard it in committee. I can't speak to all the testimony or the decisions that were made within the advisory council. I can tell you that 34 states cover these conditions to some degree. I know it's a change, but I understand that the language was really strenuous and is to be the top five most restrictive in standards. I don't know the exact cost to it. I know that we've had discussions with Senator Dames to try to deal with some of those issues, but I think that at this time it's important that we make sure that we take care of our police and firefighters and veterans that would have post-traumatic stress disorder, and I believe that's why this was included in this advisory council's recommendations.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. President, would Senator Sparks yield for another question?
He will.
If, in fact, the attempt was to address police and firefighters, which they have typically been carved out for some special treatment within the Work Comp Act, for example, if they were to suffer a heart-related condition in the course and scope of their employment, why was this then not restricted to emergency workers such as firefighters and police officers?
Senator Sparks.
Mr. President, Senator Thompson, I apologize if I wasn't clear. It will not just apply to police and firefighters. It would apply to everyone, but it's limited to traumatic events. I think that's the key thing to remember. And again, I just used the examples of those folks, but everyone would be covered if they did have post-traumatic stress disorder, which I think we think is something very important and should be covered.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. President, one more follow-up.
If I may, if Senator Sparks would yield.
Yes, he will. Thank
all
you.
Right. Senator Sparks, where is the language that limits this to mental on mental injury from a significant trauma? The diagnosis has to be PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. I see that, but I'm not seeing the language pertaining to what the causative factor has to be. Where's that?
Senator Sparks.
Thank you for your patience, Mr. President. Senator Thompson, on page 2 of the A50 amendment, on lines 2.30, I'm told that it's part of the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Mental Disorders by the American Psychiatric Association, and included in there it goes on further to describe that or to explain what is required.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. President, I would point out that is true. I saw that reference to the DSM. Pertaining to mental disorders, but that is referring to the diagnosis, not the cause. So I still am unaware of any language in here that requires any kind of a significant trauma.
Thank you, Senator Thompson. Senator Benson had requested to be recognized next.
Thank you, Mr. President. And if Senator Sparks would answer a question, I haven't had an opportunity to study this bill and would have appreciated that opportunity. If he could tell me how many amendments have been made to this bill prior to today, I'm sorry, to the amendment that was Senate File 1603.
In his committee or through the whole process?
Through the process.
Through the process.
Mr. President.
All right. Senator Sparks.
Mr. President and Senator Benson, there's been one minor change that was made in the Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development Committee.
And
Senator
Mr.
Benson.
President, if Senator Sparks could explain the minor change.
You're asking Senator Sparks to yield.
Please.
Senator Sparks will yield. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Benson, it made one small change dealing with hospitals that now will include some study language, and it also changed under the post-traumatic stress disorder who is eligible to do that. I think it was a licensed psychologist, or I don't see it right now, but that's where the two major minor changes.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I guess I'm just trying to figure out if the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council is being put forward in place of the legislature, if this is not going to be fully vetted and we just trust their judgment and rubber stamp, then why don't we just give them our election certificates? Because I really would have liked the opportunity to have this fully vetted. In that vein, I have an acquaintance who happens to be a QRC, and I do have a question for Senator Sparks about nurses as QRCs. Are they impacted in this legislation at all?
Are you asking Senator Sparks to yield?
Please.
Senator Sparks, will you yield? He will. Could you repeat your question, Senator Benson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Senator Sparks, does this legislation in any way impact a nurse's ability to be a QRC?
Senator Sparks.
Mr. President, Senator Benson, that certainly is not my understanding. In fact, the nurses have a representative on the members' council. And I would also just let the members know that in the committee, it was an author's amendment that was agreed upon language that had come out of the councils on those two minor issues that we talked about earlier, Senator Benson.
Okay. And Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your final remarks there, Senator Sparks, just affirm that we're simply a rubber stamp for the Workers' Comp Advisory Council. So you're telling me the nurses are fine as QRCs. There are no changes to QRC status vis-a-vis nurses in this bill.
Was that like a request?
That was
for
a question,
Senator?
For Senator Sparks.
Sorry, if
I'm
you can
sorry.
Help me know that you're asking a question.
I will.
Senator Sparks will yield. Senator Sparks.
Mr. President and Senator Benson, yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank
Senator
you.
Senator Benson.
And I'm just getting to some of the rehab pieces, Mr. President and members. The HHS committee deals with a lot of the occupational therapists, physical therapists, the people who are employed in the rehab process. And so as I have an opportunity to study that further, I will have more questions for Senator Sparks, but I think the members of the Human Services Committee should pay attention to what this is going to do to occupational therapists and physical therapists. And I have some concerns that members of the Human Services Committee haven't had an opportunity to vet this and answer those questions. And I think we should oppose this amendment until we get some opportunity to look at this significant change.
And I do have Senator Newman, Senator Dames, and Senator Peterson on the list, Senator Rosen being added. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I may, I'd like to ask Senator Sparks a question.
Senator Sparks will yield.
Mr. President, Senator Sparks, it's been quite a while since I've done any work comp work, so I'm a little rusty, but I do know that there are situations in which work comp insurance isn't covered by an employer, and the work comp fund winds up reimbursing an injured worker. A real quick look at this bill indicates that there are provisions for administrative conferences and involvement by the commissioner. I see in Section 12 we got a patient advocate pilot program. We've got Section 13. We've got reimbursement for a cost study. My question, Senator Sparks, is would you agree that there are potential fiscal implications to the state of Minnesota contained in this bill?
Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the sections that you talked about, again, in the beginning, I think I was very clear that I said the deputy commissioner testified that to the best of her knowledge, there would be a very minor increase to the workers' comp. I would argue, too, I think that through that pilot program, through back fusion surgery, that there could be some savings as a part of that, as well as the original language was a little bit stronger dealing with the hospitals, but we have that cost study. When that comes back, too, hopefully we can have some more of those savings.
Senator Newman, and then Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to accept Senator Sparks' answer is yes, there are potential fiscal implications to the state of Minnesota. Mr. President, I would like to ask Senator Dames a question if he'd yield.
Senator Dames will yield.
Senator Dames, I see that on the printout that I have here is that you are the committee lead on this matter. Do you have any information regarding the fiscal implications of this bill or whether or not a fiscal note has been requested?
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. President, and Senator Newman. I did request a fiscal note last Wednesday after we heard the bill in the Jobs Committee. That fiscal note will probably not be ready until late next Monday or early Tuesday. So we've requested a fiscal note. It has not come back, so that's where that's at.
Thank you.
Mr. President.
Senator Newman.
I do not ever remember seeing a fiscal note on this matter either. I sit on the Finance Committee, and I could be corrected by one of my committee members, but I do not remember ever having seen this bill in the Finance Committee. Point of fact, this is the first time that I've seen the bill is when it came on the floor this afternoon. It would seem to me that it would be absolutely appropriate for the Finance Committee to review the fiscal note that Senator Dames has requested and for the Finance Committee to review this bill. And Mr. President, assuming this would be an appropriate time, I would move that this matter be re-referred to the Finance Committee.
Senator, if you would, before you make that motion, Senator Bach's been waiting for a while to be recognized.
Thank you, Senator Bach. Thank you, Mr. President, for recognizing me. I'd like to move a brief recess, I talked with Senator Hamm, maybe 20 minutes or so. I thought the Senator Hamm's motion earlier for an hour was a little long, but maybe we can take about a 20-minute recess. Maybe people can kind of get comfortable with what we have in front of us here. So, Mr. President, I move a recess for approximately 20 minutes.
All those on the motion to recess signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, we are in recess for 20 minutes.
Would have been voted on probably an hour and a half ago and moved on quickly. But Senator Sparks, in your view, does this bill or this legislation move injuries from general health plans provided by employers, group health plans provided by employers? Does it move injuries from those plans onto the workman's comp insurance system?
Senator Chair and Senator Peterson, I believe that there could be a possibility of that to happen, but also there is a balance that would come through the bill and the amendment that's written as well. And as you well know, Senator Peterson is serving on the advisory council. We do have some study language now that will look at the reimbursement cost study, Section 13, that will look at the reducing some health care costs was part of the original compromise bill after the negotiation was replaced with a study to be conducted on this and other health-related issues between insurers, health care providers, hospitals, employers, and employees. And I think that that will be very good to see the results of that study as it comes back.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President and Senator Sparks. Well, members, this is what we've heard in the last few minutes. We've heard that this is going to shift medical claims from group health plans for employers onto the workman's comp system. We've heard that this is going to increase the cost of that insurance premium. By now, if you've been checking your messages and reviewing your notes, you know that our local government's members are opposed to this. And ultimately, members, we have no fiscal note. You have no idea what this is going to cost, and yet it's something you're gonna move forward on. Members, let me give you a story about what workman's comp insurance costs. You know, I'm part of owner of an organization that has about 80 employees, members, in manufacturing business. It's not a high risk employment pool. When you buy workman's comp insurance, you pay higher rates based on the type of employees you have. But I'm in a manufacturing situation where it's very labor intensive and somewhat risky, but it's not a high risk. With 80 employees, member, our workman's comp payment every month is about $8,000. So here you have an organization, small business in central Minnesota with 80 employees, has got a workman's comp insurance bill of about $100,000 a year. And this is going to raise those costs, members. If you don't think this is going to have an impact on organizations' ability to grow, on an organization's ability to implement safety programs, to buy safety equipment, provide safety equipment for their staff, to be able to work in these environments, and this isn't even a high risk, the organization I'm a part of isn't even a high risk facility. If you imagine have a worker, a man or a woman climbing up on a scaffold 60 feet high on a daily basis, climbing up 75 feet or 90 feet into a crane, remember, those are high risk jobs. And you know what? Those rates are absolutely going to go up with this legislation. Members, you really ought to be opposing this, and I hope you're doing some research, because if we don't know anything about this, I would be surprised if you had further information from your constituents as well in terms of which direction this bill was going to go this afternoon. This is not a vote that you're going to be proud of, members. And I'll tell you, the first time that your hardware store owner gets a claim relating to this legislation, members, you're going to hear about it. The first time a masonry contractor, an excavating contractor, a tower maintenance contractor has a claim relating to this legislation, members, you're going to hear about it, and I hope you have your answer ready.
Further discussion on the A50 amendment. Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll on the A50 amendment. All members having voted who desired to vote, the clerk will close the roll. There being 39 ayes and 23 nays, the A50 amendment is adopted. Members, discussion on Senate File 1234 as amended. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wish to move that Senate File 1234 be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary.
Motion has been made to re-refer Senate File 1234 to the Committee on Judiciary. Senator Limmer, to that motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. We seem to be running hastily toward getting this bill done and adding a number of major amendments to it. However, I'd like us just to pause a little bit. We're talking of injuries, benefit packages. There's court issues involved in this bill. The underlying bill makes reference to settlement of claims. It changes the role of district courts as well as giving some specific rules to the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. It makes reference to setting aside awards at the time of settlement and giving direction to the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. Usually we don't make references or give directions to the court, the third branch of government, unless it's vitally important. Not once have I heard a single argument to justify anything regarding the judicial elements in this particular bill. We also have reference on page 4, lines 15 through 17, the use of medical data that might be collected or disseminated. It makes reference to genetic information. In this particular case, it says that this data that may be collected does not constitute genetic information. I'd like to know why or why not we go in that direction. There are, not to mention, the amendment that was just passed, which doubles the statutory cap on attorney fees from $13,000 to $26,000, and then the subsequent regulation of the award of attorney fees when an employer unsuccessfully resists the payment of compensation. Not once have we ever heard this discussion in Judiciary Committee. This is a vitally important issue of worker comp, that is, and how we do this, the reforms that we make in this particular bill, as Senator Peterson has said, this bill will cost money. One way or the other, it'll cost money. It's just that the big question is how much money do we really want to absorb in the changes that are going on? You know, if I agree with Senator Peterson, there's unknown costs. There's unknown cost to this particular bill, and it looks like there's just beginning the inkling of some specific costs that are going to be triggered in the judiciary aspects of this particular legislation. This would be wholly irresponsible to vote on this particular bill without it going to the Judiciary Committee. Roll call, Mr. President.
Further discussion on the motion to re-refer to the Judiciary Committee. Senator Latz.
Mr. President and members, I'm going to ask you to oppose the amendment. The content of the bill that's before us is mostly housekeeping stuff. When there are policy changes of significance, we always like to see it in Judiciary, but most of what's in here in terms of the kinds of changes that are being made are minor things. I've talked with counsel, or things that we've seen before in kind. For example, the question about the data definitions, that they're not genetic information. We've actually did hear provisions of that exact kind in several other bills that came through committee on other types of matters. And that language we concluded really isn't even necessary under the law. It's just kind of comfort language. And so that issue, we've never made any changes in Judiciary as it came through, so there was no real need to consider that. The attorney's fee provisions is merely reimbursement. The principle of having attorneys' fees reimbursed has been established for a long, long time in the workers' compensation scheme. There have been some changes to some of the numbers that are in there, the thresholds and the percentages and so on, but the principle is nothing new at all. It's long established in law. So again, that's just reimbursement according to the ordinary practice. So we don't feel that there's a need for this bill to be heard by the Judiciary Committee. And that's consistent with my conversations with Senate counsel on the topic and my conversations with the Work Comp Advisory Council attorney as well.
Further discussion on the motion to re-refer. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Latz, I listened carefully to your comments. You may recall we did have discussion. You are correct. We had discussion about genetic information, the classification of it. Most of that discussion in judiciary was around the subject of the baby DNA issue. It had nothing to do with worker comp information. I don't know if it has a different reference. I don't know if we should treat this information the same or differently. I would like to have the opportunity to discuss it. I'd like to know what consequences may befall the legislature and the worker comp system if we pass this without having a full vetting. I understand that you may consider a doubling of attorney fees, 200% increase as a technical amendment. I do not. Maybe it's just the principle of the argument versus the price of the argument. But anytime we double by 200% the cost of anything in the state of Minnesota, that should be vetted. That's a financial discussion, but it also has references to aspects of policy in the Judiciary Committee as well. More and more I look at this particular bill, and I remember the days. I remember the early days when worker compensation rates were out of control in the state of Minnesota. They prior to 1995, they were the third highest in the nation. Every business from a little ma-and-pa gas station all the way up to the big box industries were complaining of the worker comp rates in Minnesota. There's a reason why we have committees. There's a reason why we specialize in certain aspects of the law, and that's to give a full vetting to every major policy discussion in the state. And this is another reason why we should bring this bill before committees that are appropriately assigned to the aspects of the intricacies of the questions that we raise. It would be wholly irresponsible for us to consider and vote on this bill if it didn't go to some of these committees, such as the Judiciary Committee.
Further discussion on the motion to re-refer. Seeing none, all those in favor signify. Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. The clerk, the secretary will take the roll on the motion to re-refer. All senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 22 ayes and 39 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the Senate File 1234 as amended. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam, Mr. President. I would renew my motion to re-refer this matter to the Finance Committee.
I'm sorry, Senator Newman. If that was a request for me, I didn't hear it.
No problem, Mr. President. I am renewing my motion to re-refer this matter to the Finance Committee.
Right. It's been moved to re-refer Senate File 1234 to the Finance Committee. To that motion, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm not going to repeat the various reasons that I had given in my earlier addressing of this motion, except to say that I want to remind members that Senator Dames has requested a fiscal note on this matter. No one has seen or reviewed that fiscal note. And I will tell you, members, that I'm sitting on the Finance Committee because that was my number one choice of committees that I wanted to be on. And I really do take that assignment to the Finance Committee very, very seriously. Now, I suppose it's possible that I'm the only member of the Finance Committee that really does want to see a fiscal note on this matter, but I kind of doubt that. I believe it is very important, and I have heard many members of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle address the fact that we have to honor the committee process. And clearly, with this bill, as amended today, we are not honoring that tradition. A fiscal note has been requested. I would consider it absolutely fiscal irresponsibility to proceed with this bill before we know and before we vote as to how it is going to impact the state of Minnesota from a financial standpoint. And from that, or for those reasons, Mr. President, I respectfully request that the members honor the traditions of sending these matters through committees and have the matter fully vetted so that when we ultimately do vote on the floor, this has been through the Finance Committee, and from a money standpoint, we know what we're voting on. Thank you, Mr. President. Roll call, if I may.
Roll call requested, roll call granted. Senator Cohen.
Mr. President and members, in particular Senator Newman, there's no question you've been a valued member of the Finance Committee, and I'm pleased to hear that the committee was your first choice. Preparatory to, not only having this bill on the floor, but when we recessed and these questions were raised, I wanted to just make sure that I was on top of what had been discussed earlier, because just so members who are on the Finance Committee understand that we'll take a look at bills as they're not necessarily introduced, but as they come through the committee process. We'll try to flag bills that have not been sent to the Finance Committee if we think it's appropriate to send the bill to the Finance Committee. Certainly go to an author, say, you know, we want the bill in the Finance Committee. You know, most seem to think it's okay, some don't. And preparatory to doing that, however, we try to take a look at the bill and make sure we understand what issues are involved. What I learned relative to this, and I probably have done this in the past, but couldn't remember a similar bill, is historically when we've had the workers' comp bills, and we have, say, a comp claim paid out of an agency, it's been absorbed in the agency budget. And it's my understanding that in past years, and Senator Newman, I apologize, I can't give you a particular year, that if there is, for some reason, some significant comp claim that's difficult to pay for out of the existing budget, then there's been included in finance deficiency bill that particular claim. Or I think in a couple of instances, it's been included in the claims bill. This year, and we'll have a bill on the floor, Senator Carlson is author of the claims bill. We have claims, for instance, for workers, not workers' compensation, but for injuries sustained by inmates at some of the correctional facilities. That's a pretty common claim that's made and then paid through the claims process, the claims bill. Sometimes you'll see comp claims show up in that fashion. But where we have handled the bill as Senator Sparks is handling it, There, the assumption is that the agency will absorb the cost. There's not a direct cost to the state, and again, will show up as a deficiency if there is something of significance. So when we looked at that, the determination was made that based on precedent, there was not the need for Senator Sparks' bill to come to the Finance Committee.
Further discussion, Senator Newman.
Mr. President, thank you, Senator Cohen. I sincerely appreciate that explanation, but I think that the key remarks that Senator Cohen made is that there is an assumption that the cost of this bill is going to be absorbed by the agency. And we simply do not know that because we have not yet seen the fiscal note that Senator Dames has requested. And I think that as state legislators, we are entitled to see that fiscal note and make an independent determination for ourselves as to whether or not that assumption is correct. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion, Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. President. If Senator Cohen was willing to accept and support a motion to send this bill to state and local gov where we could have some testimony on that assumption of his, then I could support voting against this motion. But I doubt that that's something that Senator Cohen and the members of the majority would support. So in lieu of that support, unless the other members get up and vocalize that here, this is the responsible thing to do. It is absolutely irresponsible for us when we're making significant changes that will affect cost of employers, and that includes state government. State government is a very large employer in this state. It is absolutely fiscally irresponsible to fly by the seat of our pants and assume that the greater costs can be absorbed without an appropriation to those departments. This is the responsible thing to do. Send this bill, now that it's been amended, send this bill over to the Finance Committee until we can get that fiscal note. And the Finance Committee can take a look at that, and we can then no longer assume. We can actually talk to the state departments, and they can tell us, yes, we can absorb that, or no, we can't.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, members, let me supplement what I had said a minute ago. And Senator Nino has made exactly the point. An assumption. It's a hypothetical. And so we're not going to see a fiscal note based on what is simply a hypothetical. We don't know how many claims might be presented to an agency as a consequence of this legislation. And there's no way they can guess. Could be one, could be 100, could be none. There's no way you can make that guess. You can't do it, and I'm not a comp expert, but you can't do it based on actuarial tables when you're dealing with a more finite set of individuals. In this case, state employees or the employees for a particular agency. So where it becomes a hypothetical, where we assume, and I say assume because that's what's happened in the past, that the cost can be covered within the agency's existing budget, then there's not a fiscal note that's going to be produced that will make any sense, and there is not the need to have it in the Finance Committee. That's why, in the first place, the bill was not brought to the Finance Committee.
Further discussion, Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Senator Cohen's comments simply make my case that this should go back into a committee so we can get some testimony. Because my interpretation of what Senator Cohen just said is he has absolutely no idea the implication of this bill. Absolutely no idea. It's a hypothetical. He doesn't know what it's going to do. So then let's have some testimony. Let's bring some people in. Let's get best estimates from the professionals, the people, the heads of departments, the people out in the industry, people in the insurance industry, in the healthcare industry, that we can bring them all in and talk about what their best estimate is as to what the real-life implications are. Without that, we have no idea, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Nino. Further discussion on the motion to re-refer. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. In reference to Senator Cohen's comments, Senator Cohen, do we have the cost of unionized care attendance also, or is that a hypothetical as well?
Senator Limmer, were you asking Senator Cohen to yield, or was that rhetorical?
I think I was just participating in a rhetorical exercise, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I was actually going to let this vote go and then make a motion to re-refer this to at least Health and Human Services Policy or Budget Committee, because obviously there is information and issues in this bill that needed to to be vetted through those appropriate committees. But members, Mr. President, as we all know, that would be turned down. This motion is going to be voted down. This bill needs a tremendous amount of work and attention, and it is not going to receive due diligence, and that's a real shame. But Senator, Mr. President, if Senator Lori would yield, please, or Senator Sharon, if she's in the chamber.
Senator Lori is in the chamber, will yield. Senator Sharon is not.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Lori, if you would take a look at Section 11, the treatment standards for medical services, and the new criteria for the long-term use of opioids and scheduled medications. Is that something that you would have liked to have seen in your committee?
Senator Lori.
Mr. President, Senator Rosen, I don't have that language in front of me right now.
Okay. Senator Rosen.
Mr. President, thank you. Well, Senator Lori, I'm sorry you don't have that language, because obviously it's the criteria for the long-term use of opioids and other scheduled medications to alleviate intractable pain and improve function, including the use of written contracts between the injured worker and the healthcare provider who prescribes medication. If you go down to the patient advocate pilot program, there's also language in there too. 13.3, the purpose of the program is to ensure that injured workers understand their treatment options and receive treatment for their work injuries according to accepted medical standards. And I believe that HHS policy and budget is written all over this new statute, this new language. And as I said, I am not going to make the motion to refer this back to your committee, Senator Lori, but I do think this was irresponsible for us not to have at least this bill taken to the full Finance Committee as Senator Newman has requested.
Further discussion on the motion to re-refer. Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, here listening to the conversations as to why we're not going to take this back to some of the different committees, and I find it kind of interesting. One of the reasons is because we don't know how many claims we're going to have, therefore we don't know what the cost is going to be. But with that said, it's going to be interesting if this bill passes, we're going to expect our actuarialists to come up with numbers so we can come up with workers' compensation rates. So if we're going to have our actuarialist come up with workers' compensation rates so that they can decide how much to charge the employers, why would we not have those actuarialists come in and present some of those figures to us before we pass this bill, referring it back to that committee?
Thank you, Senator Dames. Further discussion on the motion to re-refer to the Finance Committee. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I'll be brief. I'm sitting here listening to this and thinking about it and just reflecting on my own experience within this body and knowing that sometimes to our chagrin, you know, as we have bills and so on going along, and we don't think they probably have a lot of fiscal impact, but they get caught up in committee. It's like, you know, Senjum, where's your fiscal note? And there's an insistence about that, and there has been, at least during my time here and the time of many within this body, and probably that's pretty good, but here I am today, all of a sudden, this insistence, this thing about needing a fiscal note doesn't seem to exist anymore, at least on this particular afternoon, and it does seem strange, and the point here is, somebody mentioned, you know, the state of Minnesota, pretty big organization. I think it's about the biggest employer in Minnesota. There are going to be some costs here. And whether it's the Finance Committee or state and local government, or somebody ought to know what those costs are. And this thing needs to get referred to someplace to understand that a little bit better, because there are going to be costs. And, you know, okay, we can kind of clean it up retroactively. That's maybe some approach that we could use, but that's not, frankly, the way we really have operated. I think, generally speaking, we go into passing a bill, we have a pretty good sense of what the costs are going to be, and we react one way or another on it. But, Mr. President, I hope that we can accommodate this motion, make it happen. Let's do it the right way. There's nothing wrong with doing it the right way. I think simply ignoring the process here is the wrong way, and I'm almost here to suggest if we can't do it in the Finance Committee, maybe we just stay here long enough until we get a fiscal note, whether it's next Tuesday or Wednesday, and do it right within this body, because I think it's that important. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Sundrum. Further discussion on the motion to re-refer to the Finance Committee? Seeing none and a roll call having been requested, the Secretary will take the roll on the motion to re-refer. All members having voted who desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll, there being 24 ayes and 38 nays. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Members, further discussion on Senate File 1234. Senator Dames.
Mr. President, I rise in order to introduce the A51 amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Dames moves to amend the Sparks Amendment to Senate File Number 1234, adopted by the Senate May 3, 2013, as follows, page 1, line 16. This is the A51 Amendment.
Senator Dames, before members, thank you. Senator Dames, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Line 16, page 1, it removes or deletes the in good faith. And the reason I'm asking to have that taken out of there in this amendment is workers' compensation is considered to be a no-fault system. And with the inclusion of that in the language, to me that's saying that somebody's at fault. And that kind of flies in the face of the philosophy of workers' compensation that states that neither employee nor employer must prove fault. Then on page 2, line 28, we're inserting arising out of extraordinary and unusual circumstances as compared to the normal conditions of employment. And this is just to make sure that we're not paying claims on situations that arise that would be normal conditions of employment. And let's say that you're driving down the road, you're a young child and you're in the back seat of your folks' vehicle and you get in a car accident, and one of those, one of your parents are killed in this car accident. That's going to be a very traumatic experience. And now you're working for XYZ company, you're driving down the road and you see another car accident and you see a body that's been dismembered, and that's going to be very traumatic. It's my understanding under this bill that you would qualify for coverage. Yet that really didn't have anything to do with the employment. So we're just trying to make sure. We're not taking it out of the bill. We're just saying that it must be extraordinary and unusual circumstances or conditions, and that it's not just a normal condition of employment. And I would ask for your support on this amendment.
Further discussion to the A51 amendment. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Gaines and I have had this discussion. We've worked on this and talked about it in committee. In regards to the good faith issue, we met this morning with the stakeholders, and business and labor have agreed to review this over the summer, and if determined that this language is unnecessary, have agreed to return in 2014 legislature to look at it, and we can make a technical change at that time. I think we need to have the law take effect and see what happens. Also, further, when we talk about the more restrictive language, they are proposing a higher standard for police and paramedics and other first responders to qualify under this provision that applies to extraordinary and unusual circumstances. Labor has reviewed this section and opposes it. The existing language will be one of the most restrictive laws in the nation, as I said when I described the bill. And the language is proposed and is included was supported by the insurance industry as well and the employers on the Workers' Comp Advisory Committee see no reason to change this language. So I would oppose the Dames Amendment.
Further discussion to the A51 amendment. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 1234. Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will give Senator James.
Mr. President, I would rise to offer the A53 amendment.
Secretary will read the amendment.
Senator Dames moves to amend the Sparks Amendment to Senate File Number 1234, adopted by the Senate May 3, 2013, as follows. Page 13, line 7, and this is the A53 amendment.
Senator Dames, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. The A53 amendment, what this does is if you look through the bill, we have created an opportunity to do a study. And so what this bill does, or this amendment does, is adds the mental-to-mental portion, section 1, 2, and I believe 6. It adds them to the study to where there would be a study done in conjunction with the other study that would allow for the study to see what the cost would be for these mental injuries, and also then it would give an opportunity for labor and industry to take a look and see what the impact would be of Section 6 limiting the QRCs to 26 weeks. That's what this amendment would do. It still would allow Section 3 through 3 to 5 and 10 to go in effect as of October 1st of 2013 after the committee, after the study was completed and reported back on December 31st of 2013. Then the information in the study would be looked at, and the Section 1, 2, and 6 as changed, if changed, would go implemented on October 1st of 2014.
Further discussion on the A53 amendment. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. President, and just kind of reviewing this amendment quickly. I would say that in the study language, there's nothing that would restrict this from taking place as a part of that study. We've talked with the Department of Labor and Industry, and they certainly are aware of this. As a member of the advisory council, I will certainly encourage them to look at this, and so I really don't see any reason for us to add this additional language at this time, so I would oppose the A53 amendment.
Any further discussion on the A53 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A53 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 1234. Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will give the secretary will give Senate File 1234 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1234, a bill for an act relating to workers' compensation, making various policy and housekeeping changes.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1234? Seeing none, the secretary will call the roll. Members, we're under call, so please vote. And sergeants, if you'll track down any missing members. All members having voted who desired. All members having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll, there being 38 ayes and 24 nays. The bill is approved and passed as amended, and its title agreed to.
The next bill in special orders is number 115 on general orders, House File 1400, Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in support of House File 1400. This bill was brought to me and is supported by the County Attorneys Association and the Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women. The Minnesota law currently provides misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, and felony penalties for a violation of an order for protection. This bill makes four necessary and technical changes to the language of the Domestic Abuse Act due to some appellate court decisions. Currently, a misdemeanor violation is an order for protection, requires the defendant knows of the existence of the order and has violated that order. Charges can then be enhanced to a gross misdemeanor or a felony if the defendant knows of the order and knowingly violates the order. This bill strikes the second knowingly while maintaining the language that the defendant must know of the existence of the order and violates the order. What this does then is it changes and reconciles all of the levels of the crime, the misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, and felony. What this bill also does is it provides protection when a violation is done with a cell phone or a text messaging or any kind of electronic communication. Thereby, it updates our policies to include those modern types and methods of communication. Under current law, the misdemeanor domestic assault may be enhanced to a gross misdemeanor or felony if the offender had a previous qualified domestic violence-related conviction. And for some reason in the gross misdemeanor qualifications, they include a requirement that the previous violation be committed against a family member or a household member. So this bill strikes that language and also brings into alignment all levels and versions of the crime. Current law, also one last thing that this bill does is it allows evidence of certain domestic conduct be used in a domestic abuse prosecution. It replaces similar conduct with domestic conduct, and it ensures then that the violation of an order of protection is included in that process. Members, this issue is personal for me. I've experienced the pain and the heartache of someone that I love that tries to survive with only a protection order to protect them. The Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women and the County Attorneys Association support these changes because they would help keep victims of domestic violence safe and hold perpetrators accountable. I ask for your support on this bill.
Is there any discussion? Are there any amendments? The Secretary will give House File 1400 its third reading.
House File Number 1400, a bill for an act relating to public safety, modifying certain provisions regarding domestic abuse.
The Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 61 in favor, 0 opposed, the motion prevails. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Latz, someone has to move to take up the confirmation calendar. Who is moving that? Okay. The next bill on special orders, I get it, is number 41 on general orders, House File 131. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam President and members. This is a bill that will, right now under current law, auctioneers have to be licensed and bonded, but people that conduct estate sales don't have any requirements. The problem with that is that some people have had estate sale conductors sell their personal items, and then they haven't been paid for their personal items. People that do estate sales go into your home, usually go through all your personal stuff, mark it up, and sell it. So they have access to everything in your place. And not only that, but they have, many times there's nobody there because people have moved into a nursing home or into an apartment from a home or whatever. So they're either downsizing or they're eliminating what they have in their home. So what this bill would do, just a very minimal requirement. It says that they have to post a $20,000 surety bond so that if they don't pay the person that owns the property, then at least the person has access to another source for that money that they're owed. Estate sale conductors charge anywhere from 30 to 50% of what they earn in a sale, so they make out quite well. But there have been some bad actors out there, and one in particular was last week sentenced by the judge to pay back $2 million in Minnesota because he had taken people for quite a bit of money. So we're not asking that they be licensed, and we're not asking for a huge bond. With a $20,000 bond, it usually, if they have decent credit rating, it's 1% to 2% of that is the actual cost for posting that bond. So with that, Madam Chair, I believe Senator Westrum has an amendment. Thank you.
That's Madam President. Senator Westrum.
Madam President, I would like to move the A1 amendment.
Secretary will report the A1 amendment.
Senator Westrum moves to amend House File number 131 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate April 16, 2013 as follows. Page 2 after line 7, and this is the A1 amendment.
Senator Westrum.
Madam President, members, I was talking with Senator Goodwin and just clarifying that this doesn't affect the normal business that's going on out there now, typically covered by probably auctioneers in the most part with a typical auction of an estate where there's an auction that's going on, and Senator Goodwin clarified to me in Section 1 that auctions are not counted in this type of an estate sale, and I'll talk to her briefly about that after this amendment. But the other thing I wanted to clarify that is implicit in the bill, but I thought we could be more clear, that it would also clarify that attorneys or accountants who are licensed already at times may get engaged in an estate sale, or do often get engaged in an estate sale, but I just wanted to make sure this language didn't somehow cast a wide net on functions that are already going on, but attorneys and CPAs already hold a state license and are subject to board review and professional rules of conduct. And so that wasn't Senator Goodwin's intent, and this amendment just helps clarify that in this bill.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam President, and I will accept that as a friendly amendment. We certainly don't need to do that. People already are licensed. The other issue that Senator Western referred to about the auctions is that auctioneers currently are already licensed and bonded, but they're only bonded for auctions. So the bill does say that if they're going to do an estate sale versus an auction, where they stand up and auction things off, they do have to have a surety bond for the estate sale separate. Because the bond for the auction, I guess, is not going to work for the estate sale. So that's why we have that language in there. But so anybody that operates an estate sale, and it's defined what a conductor is and what a sale is, then they do have to have this $20,000 surety bond. It's only one time, unless, of course, the bond is used up for somebody that has... that has violated the trust of the person's stuff that they're selling. But it's a one-time bond that they have to have posted out there, but they have to have it posted out there at all times. So I would ask for your yes vote, and thank you. And accept Senator Westrom's amendment as a friendly amendment.
All those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Any further discussion? Senator Westrom.
Madam Chair, just a quick couple of questions for Senator Goodwin, if she would yield.
Senator Goodwin, will you yield? She will yield. Senator Westrom.
Madam President, Senator Goodwin, just I'll kind of set my understanding, and if you can just affirm this for the record, if this was ever to be challenged in a court case or somebody tried to overreach with the interpretation, it's always helpful to have a record. But Senator Goodwin, to your last comment, an auctioneer who normally conducts an estate sale, at least in our area, and I think it's quite widespread across the state, where they go in, they get personal household items prepared, set them on a hay rack, on tables, set them in clusters, and then they advertise and promote a day of an auction where the public's invited, but they in fact go through all the items, or most all the items, and send, you know, put them, hold them up for sale, auction them off. That's the type of auction you're talking about here, and that's the type of sale that you're not covering, which is traditionally going on by an auctioneer. But if an auctioneer just sets it up like a garage sale or a flea market type setting, that's the distinction that would be covered either by an auctioneer or what you're calling an estate sale conductor. Is my interpretation right for the record?
Senator Goodwin.
Madam President, and Senator Westrom, it certainly is. It's exactly right.
Any more discussion? Senator Westrom.
Madam President, just one other question, and Senator Goodwin, and I could step over and ask you this, but a surety bond, just do you have any idea, did it come up in committee about what that would cost for a conductor? Because we are going to impose this on a few people that do this just as a business model, and I'd be conscientious of what kind of expense would that be for those people. Because while there's a few bad actors, I would trust most of them are good, hardworking business people that just are trying to make a living. Just if you could share with us what you've heard or feedback on the cost of this, I'd be interested to know.
Senator Goodwin.
Certainly. Senator Westrom, the issue here, Madam President, the surety bonds cost between 1-2% of the total amount that the bond is worth, unless you have a bad credit rating. Then it can go much higher, but if you have a decent credit rating, it's usually 1-2%, so it'd be, you know, maybe a couple hundred dollars tops, and that wouldn't be for every single sale that they operate. That would be as long as the bond hadn't been used already to pay back somebody. They would have that bond for as long as they kept having the estate sales, that bond would be usable for, would be applicable to this law, this provision here. So, I'd say maybe a couple hundred dollars at tops would cost him for a $20,000 bond.
Any more discussion on House File 131? Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 131 its third reading.
House File Number 131, a bill for an act relating to commerce, requiring real estate conductors to post requiring estate sale conductors to post a bond to protect owners of the property to be sold.
The secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote. All members having voted that desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 50 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the Senate take up the confirmation calendar.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. First confirmation we're going to take up is the Board on Judicial Standards.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, I move that the report from the Committee on Judiciary reported March 6, 2013, pertaining to appointments to the Board on Judicial Standards be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Latz.
Madam President, I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye.
Madam President.
For what purpose does the gentleman rise?
I would like to move to divide the motion.
All right. Before... Senator Limmer, did you want to vote separately on each of the individuals?
That's correct.
Okay, then we can do that on the third motion. So let's take the second motion, and then we'll divide it on the third motion. Is that okay? All right, then Senator Latz moves that the foregoing report be now adopted. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Now on the next motion, Senator Latz will make two separate motions on the two individuals. Make one motion, then we'll divide out the two names.
Madam President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Judiciary, reported March 6, 2013, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Timothy Gephardt and William Wernz.
So why don't you tell us about Timothy Gephardt, and we'll vote on that.
Madam President and members, the Board on... First of all, Madam President.
Just a minute, Senator Latz. There's some confusion here. Senator Limmer, what is your
thank
request?
Thank you, Madam President. Before we get too deep into this, I move that we divide the motion.
All right, Senator Limmer, it's just a request. We'll divide between Gephardt and Wertz, and Senator Latz, which one would you like to take first?
Mr. Gephardt.
Mr. Gephardt, then proceed.
Madam President, is the Senate under call?
Senate is not under call.
I'd ask that the Senate be placed under call.
The Senate is under call. Senator Latz.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be suspended and the sergeant be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The sergeant is instructed to bring in the absent members. Senator Latz.
Madam President, the Board of Judicial Standards is a 10-member board that reviews complaints from the public relating to the personal conduct either inside or outside of the courtroom of the judges in Minnesota. It does not review the decisions relating to the legal questions that appear before the courts. The board has 10 members, one judge of the Court of Appeals, three trial judges, two attorneys who have practiced law in the state for at least 10 years, and four citizens who are not judges, retired judges, or lawyers. Members' terms are for 4 years and may be extended for an additional 4 years. Madam President, Timothy Gephardt was appointed by the governor to a term effective June 27, 2012. He is an exceptionally qualified individual. He served two terms on the Lawyers Professional Responsibility Board. He served 7 years on the District 4 Ethics Committee of the State Bar Association. He recently served on the Judicial Disciplinary Panel, chaired by Judge Gordon Schumacher. And he is presently employed as the Vice President of Claims for the Minnesota Lawyers Mutual Insurance Company in the field of legal malpractice. I ask for the body's support for his confirmation, and I'm happy to answer any further questions.
Is there any discussion on the confirmation? Seeing none, then Senator Latz moves that we now consent to confirm the appointment of Timothy Gephardt to the Board on Judicial Standards. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. The appointment is confirmed. Senator Latz.
Madam President, the second board member we're seeking to confirm today is named William Wernz. He is an attorney member of the board. He was appointed by the governor to his first term on June 1, 2011, and he has served not only with exceptional distinction while on the board so far, but has a level of experience and a resume that is, I would submit, the model for the kind of person that ought to be on this board. He is the past director and assistant director of the Office of Lawyers Professional Responsibility. He was appointed by the Supreme Court to a committee that reviewed the Board of Judicial Standards and recommended extensive amendments to the rules of the Board on Judicial Standards in 2005. He is the author of the leading treatise on Minnesota legal ethics, and he is now a retired partner from the Dorsey and Whitney Law Firm. He served as their ethics partner from 1992 until 2009. He has, while on the board, led and supported an effort for additional accountability and clarity and transparency of the proceedings of the board, as well as maintaining the highest level of standards for the review of members of the judiciary. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I ask for your support. And I should note that both of these members, including Mr. Wernz, when these matters came up before the Judiciary Committee, passed on a voice vote with no audible dissent.
Is there any discussion? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. The person that we are considering right now, Mr. Wernz, does in fact have a rather impressive resume. About a year and a half ago, we on the Judiciary Committee considered and then decided not to recommend him for this post. We believe that there are questions that come up regarding a bit of his involvement in having a history of defending judges in practice as an attorney, and now being temporarily on the board, he now has been making recommendations to destroy records of consideration of the judicial review process, or the complaint records that are before the court. I find that to be questionable. Perhaps even a conflict of interest could be raised on this issue. Anyone who defends judges, certainly a judge needs to have proper representation, but to have that individual serve on the board and then want to destroy records of proceedings is something that I think is very concerning to members that have examined the policies of this particular board. Mr. Wernz has, in fact, recommended destruction of complaint records. He claimed he was in support of that policy when he was under questioning a year and a half ago. Keep in mind that this board does all of their proceedings in secret. For a variety of reasons, we, the state of Minnesota, have allowed them to do that, as the examination of a judge is under scrutiny. This seems to be even more poignant when we know that the proceedings are secret, and even despite that, and the records are kept in secret, it's questionable to me why anyone would want to destroy the records, even though they're not available to the public. They could be used for review by a future board, or to determine if a judge has had previous experiences or previous record with this board, and to have those records destroyed, I find to be extremely questionable, and one that causes me, unfortunately, to oppose Mr. Wernz's confirmation.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Ortman.
Madam President and members, I ask for a roll call vote on this very important...
Roll call's been requested. Roll call granted.
This
Senator
is
Ortman.
A very important question. This body should never serve simply as a rubber stamp. And so if you don't know this William Wernz, and you're not familiar with his work or of his writings, I would ask you to vote no. The answer should be no until you're confident that this gentleman can serve in this very important role. Because our judges have very few measures for being held accountable. One, at least for now, is the election of judges. I think that's very important. But secondly, the only way that the citizens of the state of Minnesota have an opportunity to review a judge's work and question the ethics of judges is through the Judicial Board on Board of Judicial Standards. They hear these complaints, they investigate these complaints, and we should not be entrusting this very important responsibility to someone who has in the past shown a conflict and has also encouraged that organization to destroy the very important records of its work. Members, this is about accountability to the residents of the state of Minnesota for the work being done by our courts. We have very few opportunities to make sure that they're meeting our standards, and this Board of Judicial Standards is one of them. Please do not just vote for him without having first really understood his background and the controversial opinions and decisions that he has brought to this board.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, first of all, I want to call members' attention to the information that was submitted as a part of Mr. Wernz's application. for this position. He has a letter of reference from Walter F. Mondale. He has the most extensive resume that I have ever seen with regard to experience in the field of dealing with ethical issues and conduct both of judges and of attorneys, and both as a writer and as the treatise author. I find it difficult to understand how experience on one side or on both sides of an issue somehow disqualify you from acting as a neutral when evaluating complaints. If someone were to apply for a job and had only been a prosecutor, I would question perhaps whether they are completely biased on that side. Or if they've only been a defense lawyer, I might question whether or not they are biased. But when they have done both, and they have extensive experience doing both, they can recognize the issues better than anyone else. They have that additional experience. You do not want someone applying for a job that has no experience. We're better off with someone who has seen the issues from both sides and can therefore be more objective in their evaluation of complaints. And Mr. Wernz has exactly that experience. Now, if one actually reads his writings with regard to transparency and accountability, one will reach the opposite conclusion than the two senators who have spoken in opposition to Mr. Wernz's confirmation. Mr. Wernz has actually led the effort to have a reasonable policy with regard to handle the records that go back 25, 30, 40 years on the Board of Judicial Standards. Not every record of every decision or every investigation needs to be maintained in perpetuity. And the board would, following a policy that it has in its discretion, decide which records ought to be maintained and which records, after a certain period of time, it's appropriate to remove from the permanent files. Now, I want to tell you what Mr. Wernz has described as some of his history when he was describing procedures on the boards of judicial evaluations. Resources for evaluating complaints he has reviewed. He has reviewed the board's policies relating to meeting with judges and discussing reasoning of their decisions. Warnings and appeals of warnings. The canons and specification relating to judicial conduct should be more specific. The clear application of those canons to specific cases. The role of the board as a presider of the panel in evaluating complaints against the board. And again, I emphasize complaints that are not related to the decisions of judges in their professional legal capacity, but only in connection with their personal conduct, either in the courtroom or outside of the courtroom. Mr. Wernz has not just an extraordinary resume, but the experience that it recommends is well worth appointing and or maintaining his position on this particular board. Members, he has references that he submitted as part of his application for this position from the Honorable Edward Cleary, who is a judge, and Robert M. A. Johnson, who was a former county attorney, Kent Jernander and Charles Lundberg, both former lawyers board chairs with whom he had served, Jacqueline Hauser, a former board on judicial standards member and a founder of Watch, which is a watchdog group that makes sure that proceedings in the courtrooms, particularly by judges as they're handling cases relating to crimes, to victim situations are fair, and also the then managing partner of the Dorsey and Whitney Law Firm, Marianne Short, a retired judge of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Members, this is an extraordinary opportunity to put this individual, to confirm this individual for this board, and I heartily recommend your support.
Any more discussion? Senator Ortman.
Madam President, Mr. Wentz expressed in committee that the cost savings of doing a thorough investigation should be balanced, that the Board on Judicial Standards should consider how much it costs before it determines whether or not a complaint should be fully investigated. For me, that is very problematic, because these investigations and these complaints are brought by the residents of the state of Minnesota that bring actions forward in our courts. They have to be able to rely on the ethical conduct of our judges. And when they can't and they bring a complaint, they must be fully and fairly investigated by this Board on Judicial Standards. I'm very troubled by this gentleman's application. I don't believe we should be confirming him today.
Is there any more discussion? Seeing none, the secretary will take the roll on the motion to now consent and confirm the appointment of William Wernz. Senate is under call. All senators having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 38 ayes and 19 nays, the motion prevails and the appointment is confirmed. Next, we have Senator Marty, the Senator Marty Show.
Madam President, I move the report from the Committee on Environment and Energy reported January 31st, 2013, pertaining to appointments to the Environmental Quality Board be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevail.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move in accordance with the report from the Committee on Environment and Energy reported January 31st, the Senate having given its advice to now consent to and confirm the appointment of John Saxhog of Minneapolis, the Environmental Quality Board.
Senator Marty, any comments? All right. Then the Senate having given its advice to now consent to and confirm the appointment of John Saxhog to the Environmental Quality Board. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevailed. The appointment was confirmed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the report from the Committee on Environment and Energy report January 31st, 2013, pertaining appointments to the Clean Water Council be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move in accordance with the report from the Committee on Environment and Energy reported January 31st, the Senate having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Marilyn Bernhardson of Redwood Falls, Gary Burdorf of Arlington, Warren Formo of Eagan, Keith Hansen of Duluth, John Heron of Freeport, Frank Jewell of Duluth, Bradley Kalk of Onamia, Michael McKay of Red Wing, Todd Renville of Minneapolis, Sandra Rummel of White Bear Lake, and Lewis Smith of Minneapolis.
On the motion to consent to and confirm the appointment of the aforementioned individuals, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevailed, so the appointments were confirmed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the report from the Committee on Environment and Energy reported January 31st pertaining to appointments to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam Senator President, Marty. I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Environment and Energy reported January 13th, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Catherine Drager of Clinton and Carolyn Sampson of Minneapolis be confirmed.
On that motion.
Madam President.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to divide those two. There are some members that have questions on the Drager appointment.
Okay, Senator Marty, the motion will be divided. The confirmation of the motion will be divided. Senator Marty, which one would you like to take first?
Sure, we can take the Sampson one first. It would be fine.
Okay, on the motion to consent to and confirm the appointment of Carolyn Sampson, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. The appointment is confirmed. Now on the appointment of Catherine Drager, any discussion? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, we had a very thorough discussion in Senator Marty's committee about this appointment, and I want to draw a couple issues that sent off red flags for me. And of course, as you know, Madam President, members, I come from the rural area, and in fact, it's deep rural. I live in the largest district in largest town in my district of 11,000 people, and y'all came to, or hopefully a lot of you came to the I-90 party the other night. So you know it is ag-based, and many of us in this chamber have ag backgrounds, and hopefully understand how important agriculture is to this great state. And it is the number one economic driver. And what I am concerned is that our representation for agriculture on the Medicine Pollution Control Agency Citizen Board is represented by somebody who is on a 320-acre farm that basically is into sustainable agriculture and organic farming. And I find it very troubling that did not understand some of the issues that are facing the ag industry to date. And they are significant issues and had very little experience with the industry and what is driving this great state. And I know from a personal experience that the Citizens Board has a tremendous amount of influence on the PCA. And the first 100 million gallon ethanol plant that was built in this state was built in my district. In fact, my district has over half the ethanol produced in the state in Senate District, Senator Rosen's district. And it is that first 100 million gallon ethanol plant, I think I almost got an ulcer because of the Citizens Board and their influence and their insistence on over regulations, asking for testings, whether it was air quality or water quality, and it was extremely difficult, and in fact, it has pretty much put a stop to a lot of the ethanol expansion in this state. So I'm very concerned that we are putting somebody on that cannot represent the issues dealing with agriculture out there. If we don't keep agriculture strong in the state, we are in a very serious situation. So with that, with all due respect, Madam President, members, I'm going to ask for a no vote on this appointment because I think we could do better. Obviously, she is an adjunct professor. However, that does not mean she has the credentials to know what it's like to be a producer of crops or animal production, and that is extremely important. Senator Marty.
Madam President, members, I think Ms. Drager is a very impressive person. Her responses to the committee were very thoughtful. She's the kind of person you'd like to have representing the farm community. She's a person who did not grow up on a farm herself. She chose to study agronomy. She chose to go into the field. She married somebody who did grow up on a farm, and they decided to start farming together. They have a farm. The fact that they produce different crops in different ways than Senator Rosen might like does not mean that she's not a good farmer and one who cares passionately about agriculture industry in our state. I think the support from Minnesota Farmers Union for her appointment, she's a practicing farmer and a person who is very sincere about this, and I strongly urge members to support her.
Any more discussion? Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in opposition to this appointment, and sort of in contrast to what Senator Rosen said, I don't necessarily have a problem with a farm that is sustainable or produces organic types of crops. I don't necessarily have a problem with that. But I do have a problem with some of the answers that she gave on her testimony that Senator Marty just alluded to. One of the issues that I have is that she talked about some beans that she got. And she, I believe it was from China. And she planted these beans on her farm because she thought they were good beans. The problem is certain crops only grow in certain climates, and these beans were a miserable failure. That goes to the point that Senator Rosen was bringing up, is that we need people who have real life experience. She has a good resume from other aspects, but she doesn't have the agriculture background that Minnesotans, I think, expect. Also, her farm, she's only had that farm for approximately 5 years, where we have other opportunities. The governor can put forth someone else, I believe, that has better experience, better background in the agriculture division of the state of Minnesota. Also, under testimony, she also indicated that without her full-time job as a University of Minnesota professor, she wouldn't be able to maintain that farm because of the choices she made. Our farmers make choices every day of the week, every week of the year, that impact their ability to retain and maintain themselves as a small business. They make those choices knowing the economic benefits as well as the risks. That's something that's important that should be lent to this commission because it gives that agricultural background that I don't believe this candidate has. So I respectfully request a red vote and request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. Senator Deems.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I rise in opposition to this appointment. I think when we take a look at agriculture and take a look at how large of a piece of our economy agriculture is, I think we need to be looking for an individual that their occupation has farming primary and not secondary, and I would hardly believe that this individual's primary is agriculture. I think it is secondary. We need somebody that's primary, somebody that's active, and we have a lot of large farmers out there. We have a lot of medium-sized farmers, and we have people that are doing this for a living. That's how they move forward, and they know the real life of the decisions they make. And they don't have something else to fall back on, so they have to make good decisions. And they understand how some of the things and rules and regulations affect them. And I think that we owe it to agriculture to bring somebody into this board that is a full-time producer in agriculture, understands the process, and can put some depth into this board.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Marty.
Madam President, when Ms. Drager was testifying in our committee, there seemed to be so many attacks on whether she was really a farmer or not, despite the fact that she has a diverse farm. It's not a large one by some standards. She went to the point of telling us her husband almost died in a farm accident several years ago. They almost lost the farm over it. He's okay now. But I don't think we should have, we're grilling these folks in a way that they get to the point that she's got to acknowledge the fact her husband was almost killed in a farm accident and people still don't think they're farmers. And I think that's, there's just on the edge of challenging the personality and so on. This woman is a farmer. She's been a farmer. She's not an 80-year-old woman. She has not been farming her whole life. She wanted to be a farmer from childhood on. She studied agronomy. She does work at the University of Minnesota. Most farm families I know have at least one of the spouses working in a job somewhere off the farm as well. I strongly urge your support for her. She's highly qualified. She cares deeply about agriculture in Minnesota.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, Senator Marty, there's a lot of people that care deeply about agriculture, but they don't understand agriculture. I'm an agronomist, too. However, when I invited her to come on to a farm and see what real ag production is like, 1,200 sow unit, she never said, oh, I've been there, I've done that. She's never been to a hog setup. She doesn't know about big-time farming, how this is the number one economic driver in the state is agriculture. And we better get this right, members, because you cannot mess with agriculture. This is not about a hobby farm. This is about our basic economy in the state. And I feel that somebody that just is on a sustainable agricultural mission is not somebody that needs to represent our folks out there that are trying to make it and make it good. So, members, this is a very competitive industry they're in, and we need to get somebody that can talk the talk and understands agriculture for the entire spectrum, not just for a small segment.
Senator Benson. Senator Peterson.
Madam President, would Senator Marty yield?
Senator Marty will yield. Senator Peterson.
Madam President and Senator Marty, do you know, or in her testimony at all, I'm not in that committee or serve on that committee, but does she understand how a modern milk producing or milk dairy operation in Minnesota operates today?
Senator Marty.
Madam President, I did not grill her on every bit of knowledge. She's a professor of agronomy and plant genetics. Her husband grew up on a dairy farm. I could not answer her knowledge about every aspect of agriculture. I can tell you that she is a real farmer with a real farm, and she cares very deeply about farmers of every kind in this state. And Madam President, I impose the call of the Senate for the duration of the appointments.
Senate is under call.
Madam President.
Okay. Senator Peterson, wait till we lift the call.
Madam President, I move further proceedings in the roll call be dispensed with and the sergeants be instructed to bring in absent members.
All those favors say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The sergeant is instructed to bring in the absent members. Senator Peterson.
Members, I would encourage you to defeat this nomination. Members, in Stearns County, the dairy farms members is a $300 million a year operation. That's one county in central Minnesota. Granted, it's the largest milk producing county in the state. There is no doubt. Maybe others will dispute that. I'm not sure. But members, if we have somebody that's headed to the Citizens Board who doesn't understand what it is, what an 8 or 10,000 gallon manure pit and the impact that has on the surrounding community and the environment and the costs that are associated with an operation like that, members probably does not have the background and the expertise to be able to take votes in the citizen board that will affect these operations drastically as they move forward. and I would encourage you to oppose this confirmation.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, it's been an interesting conversation here, and I just want to talk about what the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency does. It considers and makes decisions on a varied and complex pollution problems that affect areas of the state. The Citizen Board consists of commissioners and eight members who are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the state senate for a four-year staggered term. One member must be knowledgeable in the field of agriculture. One member. So, Madam President, members, the idea behind this particular position is that they get farming inside and out and have the ability to be an advocate for agriculture and farming in this very, very important board. And so as I look at and have heard the testimony related to Catherine Drager, I don't know her personally, but there's no way that that would be the right person for this position based on what we're looking for.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, make no doubt, this Citizens Board of the PCA is extremely powerful, and we are talking about agriculture here, so you're automatically going to assume it's just crop and animal production. But for anybody, all of our rangers up north, anybody in here that has an ag product, which can be timber, and I include mining in this discussion too, it's a product of Minnesota. It's a natural resource of Minnesota. And this board is going to have a tremendous amount of power on your permitting and your regulations in this state. So I would take this very serious, this appointment. And as I said, we want to appoint people that have the background. She's a very nice lady. I'm not saying that at all. I am saying that she does not come with the credentials to represent the ag industry, our natural resources, efficiently.
Is there any more discussion? Then the secretary will take the roll on the motion to confirm. Senate is under call. All senators having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 35 ayes and 18 nays, the motion prevails. The appointment is confirmed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the report from the Committee on Environment and Energy reported January 31st pertaining to appointments to Minnesota Environmental Quality Board be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Environment and Energy, reported January 31st, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Kate Knuth to the Environmental Quality Board.
Is there any discussion? Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Marty yield?
Senator Marty will yield.
Senator Marty, was there any discussion in those hearings related to her position on the permitting reform bills that we did the last 2 years that the governor signed? I just need clarification of where she was at on those.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Gazelka, we did have a fairly lengthy discussion of Ms. Knuth, but I don't recall that we discussed votes she had in the House of Representatives.
Senator Gazelka.
Madam President, that's disappointing because I know for a fact that she did not vote for the major permitting reform bills that both the governor and legislative bodies together talked about and passed to speed up that process. And if we're going to put her on the Environmental Quality Board, and her position is contrary, number one, to where the governor is at, but number two, where we're at, that gives me pause for great concern. And so, Madam President, I would definitely like a roll call on this this vote.
Sorry, did you request a roll call? Okay, roll call requested, roll call granted. Is there any more discussion? Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. We did ask about Representative Knuth's votes, and she was evasive in her answers because now that she is going to be on the Environmental Quality Board, she did not want to be as straightforward as when you had to push green and red buttons. She has been an advocate for a high level of regulation, which would make it much more difficult to do basic business growth in the state of Minnesota, and I urge members to oppose this nomination.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, members can vote the way they see fit on these appointments, but I think let's watch what we're saying about people. I do not think Ms. Knuth was evasive in her answers. I don't think she's ashamed of her record in the legislature. I think that Senator Gazelka on those regulatory reform votes, I guarantee you this committee is very, this Senate is fully divided on some of those issues. The governor obviously felt strongly enough about her that he was willing to appoint her, even if, as you say, he disagrees with her on that. I think Ms. Knuth, she's finishing her doctor's degree at the University of Minnesota. She's been heavily involved in these issues. She's extremely smart and thoughtful woman, and I'd strongly urge your support.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam President. And I know Kate Knuth very well, and she's very highly regarded in the environmental community. She is reasonable and responsible and very intelligent. She has given speeches all over the nation and, in fact, internationally on environmental issues. She is studying for her PhD and nearly completing her PhD at the University of Minnesota. She, of course, served in the Minnesota House. She has, has always been regarded as one of the most prominent experts on environmental issues within the legislature in the last few years. So I highly recommend her and hope you will support her.
The motion before the body is to consent and confirm the appointment of Kate Knuth to the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board. The secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 37 ayes and 17 nays, the motion prevails. The appointment was confirmed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the report from Committee on Environment and Energy reported February 4th, 2013, pertaining to appointments with Sard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move in accordance with the report from Committee on Environment and Energy reported February 4th. The Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Jane Kingston of Eveleth and Scott Rawl of Worthington.
On the motion to consent and confirm the appointment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevailed. The appointment was confirmed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move a report from the Committee on Environment and Energy reported February 4th pertaining to the appointments of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move in accordance with the report from the Committee on Environment and Energy reported February 4th. The Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Eric Gustafson of Edina and Dennis Jensen of Duluth to the MPCA.
On the motion to consent and confirm the appointments aforementioned, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The appointments were confirmed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the report from Committee on Environment and Energy reported February 14th be pertaining to appointments to the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move that foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move in accordance with the report from Committee on Environment and Energy reported February 14th. The Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Bonnie Harper-Lohr of Minnetonka and Norman Moody of Hackensack to the LCCMR.
On the motion to consent and confirm the appointment of the aforementioned individuals, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevailed. The appointments were confirmed.
Senator
Marty.
Madam President, I move that the report from Committee on Environment and Energy reported February 14th pertaining to the appointments of the Public Utilities Commission be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move that in accordance with the report from Committee on Environment and Energy reported February 14th, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Beverly Jones Heidinger of St. Paul to the Public Utilities Commission.
On the motion to consent and confirm the appointment of Beverly Jones Heidinger to the Public Utilities Commission, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. The appointment was confirmed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move that the report from Committee on Environment and Energy reported February 14th pertaining to appointments LCCMR be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move in accordance with the report from the Committee on Environment and Energy reported February 14th, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Thomas Cook of Greenfield in Hennepin County and Nancy Gibbon of St. Louis Park be to the LCCMR be confirmed.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. The appointments were confirmed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the report from Committee on Environment and Energy reported February 21st be taken to pertaining to appointments from LCCMR be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move in accordance with the report from Committee on Environment and Energy reported February 21st. The Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of William Faber of Brainerd to the Legislative Commission, Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevailed. The appointment was confirmed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, we're getting there. I move that the report from Committee on Environment and Energy report April 11th pertaining to appointments to Sard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move in accordance with the report from Committee on Environment and Energy reported April 11th, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Susan Olson of Austin and Elizabeth Wilkins of Mora to the Lassard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevailed, so the appointments were confirmed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the report from Committee on Environment and Energy report April 11th pertaining to appointments to Public Utilities Commission be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, nay. Motion prevailed.
Madam President, I move that in accordance with the report from Committee on Environment and Energy report April 11th, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Nancy Lang to the Public Utilities Commission.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. So the appointment was confirmed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, the final one. I move the report from Committee on Environment and Energy report April 11th pertaining to the appointment of Minnesota Environmental Quality Board be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Senator Marty.
Madam President, I move that in accordance with the report from Committee on Environment and Energy report April 11th, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Julie Goering of Moorhead to the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevailed, so the appointment was confirmed. Senator, we move now to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Are there any announcements? Are there privileged reports at the table? What are we doing? We revert to the fifth order of business, reports of committees. Senator Bach.
I read it.
The Secretary will read the report.
Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which was re-referred Senate file number 1191, a bill for an act relating to retirement, various retirement plans, redefining salary for benefit and contribution purposes, reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the committee report read by the Secretary be adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. We move now to the sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. Senate file 1191 will be given its second reading. 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Are there any announcements? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm just wondering if the Majority Leader could, before we adjourn, just advise the body about the schedule for next week, just what we can look forward to, whether we're going to be in session every day or we're going to be in session on Saturday, just a little bit of a heads up of where we're headed.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, Senator Hand, I think you can expect to be in session Monday through Friday. I'm not sure about Saturday yet, but I'd like to avoid it if we can. It's opening a fishing, but my lake is frozen and will be. I think you're going to expect we're going to try and minimize the amount of floor time, take up some policy bills, but clearly we have to give conference committees time to start getting their work done so we can get the state budget wrapped up. But it would be probably a series of smaller bills. The House passed the minimum wage bill today, so I'd expect at some point next week we'd probably take that up. That would be one of the larger policy issues.
Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senators Weber, Rood, Kiffmeyer, Brown, all day. Senator Daines from 11:20 to 11:30. Senator Stump, Western, Limmer, Torres Ray from 11 to 11:30. Senator Champion from 11 to 1. Senator Hall from 12:45 to 1:50. Senator Hand from 2:40 to 3. Senator Pratt from 12:45 to the end of session. Senator Ingebrigtsen from 3:15 to the end of session. Senator Brandon Peterson from 3:20 to the end of session. Senator Sharon from 3:30 to 4. Senator Eakin from 3:25 to 3:30. Senator Miller from 3:40 to the end of session. Senator Westrum from 3:40 to the end of session. Senator Metzen Housley from 4 p.m. to the end of session. Senator Latz at 4:05 to the end of session. Senator Rosen at 4:10 to the end of session. Are there any other announcements? Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I just handed out a flyer on the Homegrown Music Festival that's going on in Duluth this weekend. Everybody's probably going to run straight home. But if you want a little sanity break here towards the end of session, we have some 180 bands playing in about 20 different venues. It draws several thousand people to the community for the weekend. Sadly, I have to announce that Trampled by Turtles, featuring Senator Saxhog's son, it played earlier this week. But there's still a lot of good bands this weekend, so come on up. We'd love to have you as a guest.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, Finance, 8:30 Monday.
Any other announcements? Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the Senate do now adjourn until Monday, May 6th, 12:30 p.m.
All those in favor of the motion, say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.